Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. A Somali official says the militant group al-Shabaab has taken possession of a small plane that crashed Wednesday west of the capital of Mogadishu. Sources tell VOA Somali service that nine to 11 people were on board that plane. It came down near the al-Shabaab-controlled village of Omar Dari. There was no immediate word on the fate or identity of those on board, and it's not known what caused the crash. Sources speaking on condition of anonymity tell VOA that the plane had been chartered by contractors working with security operations in Somalia. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara has won a second five-year term in office, according to official election results. The country's election commission said early Wednesday that Ouattara took 83.66% of the vote in Sunday's election. The commission has already estimated that turnout from Sunday's vote at around 60%. However, a civil society group put the figure at 53%. The long-awaited African Union Commission of Inquiry report on the South Sudan conflict has been released. It finds that both the South Sudan government and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar committed human rights violations, some of which the report says constitute war crimes. Meanwhile, the South Sudan government officials were not available for comment. U.S. stocks were higher Wednesday, boosted by gains in Apple and a sharp bounce in energy stocks. It comes ahead of the Federal Reserve statement on interest rates. The Fed's statement is due at this hour after its two-day policy meeting ends. The central bank hasn't hiked rates in about a decade, and markets see virtually no chance that it will do so at the meeting. VOA News. Iran says it will attend the international talks on Syria's future later this week. It marks the first time Iranian officials will take part in an international summit aimed at finding a solution to the conflict in Syria. Iranian media reported that Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif will attend the meeting in Vienna, accompanied by three deputy foreign ministers, according to a foreign ministry spokeswoman. Meanwhile, the U.S. delegation is to be led by Secretary of State John Kerry. The main set of meetings is due Friday. However, preliminary talks are expected Thursday. Germany's interior minister has sharply criticized Austria for sending migrants and refugees to its borders without prior notice and under the cover of night. He spoke to reporters in Berlin.
In the last days, the flüchtlingszahlen.
The interior minister, Thomas de Maizière, says the number of refugees has risen significantly in recent days because of a backlog on the Balkan route. He adds that a huge effort was managed to take in asylum seekers and refugees in Bavaria and were able to distribute them further across Germany. Meanwhile, the minister went on to say that many Afghans reaching Germany will most likely be sent back to their country. China lashed out at the United States for sending a warship near disputed South China Sea inlets and reefs claimed by Beijing, while Washington has promised to conduct more patrol missions. Beijing's foreign ministry said Wednesday that it summoned U.S. Ambassador Max Baucus to deliver a formal protest over the Tuesday incident. Meanwhile, a U.S. defense official said Tuesday that it's likely the U.S. Navy will make more patrols in the area. Global internet freedoms declines in a fifth year in a row for millions around the world. That's the conclusion of a new report titled Freedom on the Net 2015. That report was released Wednesday by Freedom House. Governments around the world continue restricting online expression, censoring websites, and cracking down on a variety of tools designed to protect user privacy. Laura Reed is with the Freedom on the Net project.
We're seeing this through governments passing new legislation and directives which expand their legal capacity to conduct surveillance, to retain user data. We're also seeing the proliferation of surveillance technologies around the world, both in kind of more democratic environments as well as in countries where governments have abused those technologies in the past and have used them against human rights activists, critical journalists, other groups like that.
It's the sixth annual survey of 65 governments and their policies regarding censoring online internet, electronic surveillance, and how they may punish citizens whose online activities they disapprove of. You can read more details on that at voanews.com. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiyis Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
It's been a bumpy ride for Tanzania this week as results from Sunday's presidential and parliamentary polls have trickled out of the National Electoral Commission.
That's Jill Craig reporting from Dar es Salaam. Details coming up.
Also, Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has won a second term in office. As winter approaches, health conditions are deteriorating for an estimated 6,000 migrants in the French port city of Calais. And the Nigerian military says it has rescued nearly 340 children and women who were held captive by Boko Haram militants.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the Nigerian military says it has rescued nearly 340 women and children who were held captive by Boko Haram militants. It says they were found in two camps on the edge of the Sambisa forest in Borno State. The military announced on social media that the rescues occurred yesterday when they attacked the camps and killed 30 Boko Haram fighters. Nigerian troops have rescued hundreds of Boko Haram captives this year, but most of the more than 300 girls kidnapped from a school in Chibok a year ago remain missing.
The UN estimates the six-year-old Islamic uprising has led to the deaths of about 20,000 people and driven 2.3 million from their homes. Also, troops in neighboring Niger are pursuing a band of militants who killed about 14 residents of a village last night near the Nigerian border. Security sources say suspected Boko Haram insurgents attacked the village of Ala in Nigeria's Difa region. They reportedly executed the residents before burning their homes. Niger's parliament has extended a state of emergency for the border region for another 3 months.
Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has won a second term in office. He received 83% of votes on Sunday, according to official results announced overnight. His win doesn't come as a surprise, and as Emily Yob reports from Abidjan, Ivorians are reveling in the calm.
Car honking, people rushing to work, vendors selling coffee by the side of the road, the streets of Abidjan look just like any other day, just a few hours after results were announced. And this simple fact is for Tonian Amalaman a reason to rejoice. He says it doesn't matter who won. I'm happy to be able to walk down the street and see that there is no violence. A nearby opposition supporter agrees. I am not a supporter of Ouattara, this woman says, but I must admit that I'm happy because I was fearing the announcement of the result. I didn't want any violence, she says. But everything went well, and I hope it will last, because you need peace if you want a country to develop. President Ouattara won a landslide victory. Second place candidate, Pascal Affien-Guessan, got just 9% of the vote. In 2010 and 2011, more than 3,000 people were killed in post-election violence when incumbent President Laurent Gbagbo refused to accept defeat. Internationally accepted results showed Ouattara had won the November 2010 vote. Gbagbo is awaiting trial at The Hague for crimes against humanity, but tensions live on. Behind the scenes of a planned electoral holdup, read one local newspaper headline Wednesday morning. Several opposition candidates pulled out of this race before and even after voting, while others called for a boycott. Gbagbo's supporter Roland Andrin says he didn't vote and claims the 54% turnout announced by the Electoral Commission is false.
Les élections se sont passées dans le calme.
He says elections were calm because the real Democrats stayed home. He says the people of Ivory Coast know Ouattara is an imposter. Ouattara's first term was focused on getting Ivory Coast's economy back on track, and Ivorians say there is more work to be done. This man, Sekone Awona, says this is what we are asking the president, especially job for the youth. There is too much unemployment. Local and international election observers say that, despite minor incidents, Sunday's poll was free and fair. Emily Yob from VOA News in Abidjan.
Music. It's been a very bumpy ride for Tanzania this week. Results from Sunday's presidential and parliamentary polls have been slowly trickling out of the National Electoral Commission, and Zanzibar is in turmoil over its election results. Jill Craig reports from Dar es Salaam.
While election observers have generally agreed that voting Sunday was organized and calm, the process has since hit some snags. Tanzania's opposition party, Chadema, said Monday that police detained 40 of its volunteers who were tallying results of the presidential election. The police commissioner said the arrests were based on violations of electoral procedures. A few street skirmishes have been reported around Dar es Salaam since Sunday, allegedly by some voters frustrated by the delays. Harold Sungusia is director of advocacy for the Legal and Human Rights Center in Tanzania.
In other countries, it could be worse, but here, at least people have that kind of their attitude, which is being patient, being calm, and then being able to wait until things are done. But this time around, those few incidences are kind of tarnishing our good name as a good country of people who can lead their things without violence.
The Electoral Commission in semi-autonomous Zanzibar annulled its elections Wednesday, citing violations of electoral law. This comes after the main opposition presidential candidate there declared himself the winner Monday before any official results were announced. Police fired tear gas to disperse crowds. George Otieno is a shopkeeper in Dar es Salaam. He says that people need to follow the law.
The only thing I know that you are not supposed to declare yourself a winner before the Electoral Commission announces your name.
Lead opposition candidate Edward Lowassa of Chadema Party called Wednesday for a recount of the presidential vote, saying he will not accept the result. As of late Tuesday, the ruling party candidate for president, John Magufuli, was in the lead. With just around half of the districts announced, the CCM candidate held 56.51% of the votes, while Lowassa had 41.67%. Meanwhile, the opposition coalition, UKAWA, which includes Chadema, picked up at least 9 parliamentary seats from ruling party members, including several cabinet members, dealing a blow to the CCM. Shopkeeper Irene Kafuro says people need to remain calm.
I think our leader have to make a condition for people to accept anything can happen. In an election, people can win and people can lose.
Final presidential results are expected Thursday. Jill Craig, VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Thank you, Jill. Tanzania's opposition candidate for president, Edward Lowassa, wants a recount of the presidential poll. Lowassa says there were gross irregularities in the conduct of vote and the rigging and manipulation of the final count. The ruling party says its presidential candidate is ahead with about 60% of all ballots counted. The ruling party claims the lead in parliamentary elections. VOA's Vincent McCorry is in Dar es Salaam. He explained to reporter William Eagle why a manual recount of the vote may be difficult.
First, you have to start by pointing out that actually there's no legal recourse. Under a certain rule from some years back, no candidate or party can go to a court of law and make any demands. So as things stand now, it will be upon the good heart, if you say so, of the Electoral Commission to make any of such accommodation from the opposition.
Vincent, it seems ironic that the Electoral Commission on the mainland has supported the conduct of the poll there, and yet it's a quite different story in terms of Zanzibar and its Electoral Commission. Tell us about that.
In fact, the opposition was just starting to have the press conference this morning. News came from Zanzibar that the election commission there, the election commission chairman, Jecha Salim Jecha, had nullified the results in Zanzibar. And what did he say? He said there was gross violations, and therefore that election was annulled, and there would necessarily be a new election in Zanzibar, which was such a surprise. And was picked up by the opposition as evidence that there is a scheme to deny the opposition victory in this election.
Did he name or articulate any specific violations that he considered to be gross violations?
Well, they say there was interference with the polling stations, but some youth may have stormed some of the polling stations and interfered perhaps with the ballots there. And this followed the opposition leader's declaration that he had won the election, young people immediately almost demanded that he be declared the president of Zanzibar. And, of course, the police intervened. They tear-gassed him, and there were skirmishes there. So they are hopefully, I mean, maybe could be using those incidents as a reason to consider, issues of violations around the polling stations in Zanzibar and Pemba.
Have you noticed yet any reaction in the press or in the streets to any of these announcements today?
Well, in Zanzibar, you know, there has been a lot of tension. There have been demonstrations already, several clashes between the police and the opposition supporters. The authorities there have been really hard, even on the media. They're not allowing foreign media particularly to film anything. So we have a hard time even getting any images from Zanzibar. But on the mainland, so far, I think people are trying to dissect and also kind of synthesize the information they're receiving from their leaders, the leaders of the opposition. Generally, the citizens haven't had any, major reaction because the opposition leaders said they're going to have another meeting to determine what is the next move after today.
I understand that also on Tuesday, the African Commonwealth and European election observers issued a preliminary report on the polling. Can you tell us what that report said?
All the international electoral monitoring teams actually did release their preliminary reports. That included the European Union observer team led by the former president of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan. There is also the South African Development Community Monitoring Group. There's the Great Lakes and Monitoring Group. There was also the Africa Union and also East Africa Community, including also the European Union Monitoring Electoral Monitoring Team in Tanzania. Almost to, all of them. Let me say all of them said the elections were credible, except for some issues here and there. They were categorical that these issues were isolated, although they did qualify their statements by saying that they'll continue monitoring until the process is completed. But at that point, they said by yesterday, they considered the election fair, free, and credible, despite some notable issues at isolated polling stations. They did, however, say that they were concerned about the situation in Zanzibar, but all they said was that they were concerned that the opposition leader had announced himself the president, which was goes against the rules of the Electoral Commission. But also they were concerned about the arrest of some young people who were found collating election results at polling stations. And the tension, of course, that was and has been very, very palpable on the island.
That was VOA's Vincent McCourry. He was speaking to reporter William Eagle.
As winter approaches, medical officials in the French port of Calais warn that health conditions are deteriorating for an estimated 6,000 migrants. They're currently camped on the shores of the English Channel. Officials may offer to move the migrants into shipping containers to be used as shelters. Currently, the migrants are living in tents. They chose the location because it's near the mouth of the Channel Tunnel that leads to England. Meanwhile, Austria has announced it would build a fence alone along its border with Slovenia, consisting of containers and railings. Austria wants to slow and control migrants' flow from the Balkans. But Germany has criticized the move as the two countries disagree over how to handle the crisis. Hungary and other Balkan neighbors have erected barbed wire fences and other barricades to slow or block the passage of migrants.
In related news, 11 political parties in the Netherlands have published an open letter encouraging calm and reason. Also, UN Human Rights Commissioner Zayed Raad Al Hussein has warned politicians to temper their language during the migrant crisis. He says derogatory language causes violence, racism, and bigotry, and the Swedish government has decided to stop publicizing where migrants and refugees are being housed. Arsonists have damaged or destroyed 20 facilities for migrants in recent weeks. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yais Wuhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The Nigerian military says it has rescued nearly 340 children and women who were held captive by Boko Haram militants. Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has won a second term in office. And as winter approaches, health conditions are deteriorating for an estimated 6,000 migrants in the French port city of Calais. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
The World Health Organization announced today the yearly death rate from tuberculosis is nearly half of what it was in 1990. However, the WHO says 1.5 million people died from the disease in 2014. It says most of the deaths could have been prevented. The World Health Organization released its annual tuberculosis report today. In related news, people infected with HIV, the AIDS virus, are at much greater risk of also being infected with tuberculosis. And TB can kill a lot quicker than AIDS. That's why a major conference on TB is scheduled for Durban, South Africa, next July. TB 2016 will immediately precede the 21st International AIDS Conference. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
International AIDS Society President Chris Byra says TB is one of the world's deadliest communicable diseases.
TB and HIV are really inextricably linked epidemics. And TB is, of course, a killer on its own, but it is also what we call an opportunistic infection in people living with HIV. And it's actually the leading cause of death for people with HIV infection. About 25% of all AIDS deaths are due to TB on top of HIV.
Byra is a professor of epidemiology at Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health. He explains why HIV patients are so at risk from the TB bacteria.
One unfortunate reality is that the HIV virus, of course, weakens the immune system. That's why it's called the human immunodeficiency virus. And that weakening of the immune system means that people who have exposure to TB, and in many parts of the world, the majority of people have TB exposure as children and have latent TB, they're much more likely to progress to active tuberculosis disease and also to transmit tuberculosis.
HIV epidemics, he says, ramp up TB epidemics.
Second issue is that people progress more rapidly if they have both HIV and TB. They're more likely to have TB in other parts of the body, not just in the lungs, and they're sadly more likely to die of TB.
TB 2016 is a two-day event preceding AIDS 2016 in Durban. The AIDS conference was last held in Durban in 2000. It was the first time the meeting was in a developing country, and the first time the gathering looked at the social and economic impacts of the disease, rather than just the scientific. Barris says treating HIV infections and preventing new infections are key to tuberculosis control.
That is one of the reasons why we felt it was so important at this conference, coming back to Africa now after 16 years, to really highlight the TB-HIV interactions.
There are several types of tuberculosis, including those that resist treatment. They are multi-drug resistant TB and extensively drug resistant TB. treatment can be long, harsh, and often unsuccessful.
Of the 9 million or so people who have TB, a substantial proportion of them now, close to 500,000, have multidrug-resistant TB. Extensively drug-resistant TB, which is resistant to virtually all the drugs that we currently have, emerged in South Africa, although it's now been seen in many other places, in the context of folks with HIV and TB infection. So that is a real concern.
Professor Behra says to tackle HIV-TB will take a lot of resources at a time when budgets are very tight.
This year, on World AIDS Day, so that's December 1st, the World Health Organization is going to announce the major change in the guidelines for treatment of HIV, which will be that everyone should be offered immediate therapy if they're diagnosed with HIV infection, so not waiting until they have more advanced disease. That's going to mean that 22 million more people are going to be eligible for therapy. Right now, worldwide, we have 15 million people on antiviral therapy.
That's going to take a lot more money, but health officials say it would be cheaper in the long run because patients would not succumb to opportunistic infections. Treatment would be given before HIV destroys or heavily damages the immune system. AIDS 2016 returns to Durban after 16 years with the theme Access, Equity, Rights Now. Back in 2000, things were very different in South Africa. Then President Thabo Mbeki refused to say HIV caused AIDS. Health officials and activists say that position delayed antiretroviral therapy in the country for years. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. National Academy of Sciences says there is a decline in lion populations in Western Central Africa. Researcher Philip Henschel told the Associated Press there are only about 400 lions remaining in the Western Central region. He predicts only about 200 will be alive in 20 years. There are about 20,000 lions left in Africa. Most are in game preserves in South Africa, Botswana, Zimbabwe, and Namibia. There's also news about more elephant poaching. In Zimbabwe, rangers found 22 elephants in the nation's premier wildlife sanctuary poisoned with cyanide. Poachers had poisoned 40 other elephants earlier in the month. Park officials say three poachers from Zimbabwe and one from Mali were arrested at the Harare International Airport this week. Inspectors discovered they were in possession of 172 pounds of ivory bound for Singapore. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we follow up on Sunday's elections in Ivory Coast and Tanzania as votes are being tallied to determine who will lead both countries for the next 5 years. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests for an in-depth analysis on the elections. That's Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.